Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
We started a new series last week called Some Assembly Required, and if you didn't get to check it out, it's online. We have our podcast online, and we also tape our services, and you can watch them online as well on Vimeo at anchoredhope.church. But we started a new series called Some Assembly Required, and you know, every single one of us, at some point or time, we've bought something looking at the advertised ideal version of it, right? Like the fully put together, fully assembled, perfect model-looking picture of it, right? And we looked at that, and we're like, oh, I want one of those. I'll buy one of those. I'll take one of those. I'm going to order one of those. But what we found out is that picture, that advertisement, was a little bit misleading because that was the fully put-together, perfect, ideal model picture of it, right? And then what got brought out to you, what got put in your car, what got delivered to your door by Amazon was a not-assembled piece of furniture, piece of equipment, thing you had to do. And so on the box right there, it said some assembly required. And it turns out to get to that ideal image, to get to that model, you can have that too. It can be yours, but you're going to have to put it together and you're going to have to put some work into it. There is going to be some assembly required. And we're talking about for the next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about how to assemble the family we want to resemble. That was the question that we introduced last week. How do we assemble the family we want to resemble? Because this is exact same with the family. When you got married, you had this ideal image in your head of this is what it's like to have a relationship. This is what it's like to be in love. This is what it looks like, and this is what we're going to do, and it's just going to be all sunshine and rainbows. But then once you really got into it, once you really started to, you know, get married or started to get to know each other a little bit more, or 5 years into marriage, 10 years into marriage, you were like, oh my goodness, this is going to take some work. They are a mess. I should have listened to my mother-in-law a little bit more closely, you know? Because it's going to take some work. There is some assembly required. Or when you had kids, you thought, oh, look at it. It looks easy. It's just a little baby. It's just, he sleeps all day. That lasts 3 weeks, okay? Then they start talking and things change, right? But you thought, oh, it'll be easy having kids. I'll have 4 of them. I'll have 5 of them, you know? No, you won't unless some mistakes happen, right? Because it turns out there is some assembly required. Having a family is great. And it is that we can reach that. It's okay to have dreams and aspirations. And that idea that you had in your head, I'm not trying to be pessimistic. It's attainable. But the problem is you got to understand some work's got to be done. There is some assembly required. So last week we introduced another question, kind of your first tool, your first Allen wrench on how to assemble the family you want to resemble. And that question was this: what can I do to help? What can I do to help? We talked about if everyone in the family would mutually submit to one another. If everybody in the family had this attitude that, you know what can I do to help? What can I do? How can I use what I have access to, my time, my energy, my money? How can I put it under your burden? And how can I leverage it for your success? What can I do to help? Oh my goodness, if everybody in the family would ask each other that question, if everybody would mutually submit to one another and use what they have to leverage the person for the success that they have, oh man, it would be awesome. I mean, our family, we would be able to assemble that family that we want to resemble. And this morning, I want to talk to you about another aspect of the family, something that's very common in family. I want to talk to you about conflict, okay? Conflict in the family. We avoid conflict like the plague, right? Nobody likes conflict. But the problem is that it's almost inevitable. And it's especially inevitable whenever we are in the terms of the family, when we're talking about the terms of the family and the culture of the family. We're close to one another. We're in close proximity together. We spend a lot of time to one another. We're emotionally invested in one another. There is going to be conflict in the family. And not only are we going to have conflict in the family, but it's going to be different than any other conflict we go through, right? I mean, you process and you feel conflict in regards to the family completely different. I mean, if somebody at work calls you a jerk, you're like, I'm not a jerk. I'm fine. Whatever. I don't care what you think. But if your mom calls you a jerk, you're like, Mom, no. You know? It's just different. You know what I mean? You don't want your mom to say those things about you because it's your mom or it's your brother, it's your sister, it's your dad, it's your cousin, right? So you process, you know, conflict completely different in terms of the family. And the other thing is that when we're in conflict with one another, when it does come, all of us deal with conflict differently, right? I'm going to give you four different kinds of people in your family. Maybe you can identify yourself, or maybe you can nudge the person next to you, right? But there are four different types of conflictors in the family. There's the peacemakers, right? The peacemakers, who as soon as conflict goes up, they're just like, can't we? No, let's just get along. You know what I mean? And they just want to put the flame out as fast as possible. You know what I mean? To even the point where they don't deal with their own emotions. They don't deal with what they're feeling inside. You know, and you know they're upset about this. You know they probably need to talk about this. And you ask them, you know, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. No fighting. Let's not fight. Okay? No fighting. Yeah, but I mean, I know you're upset with me. Why don't you tell me why you're upset with me? No, I'm not upset with you. Right? And they push it down, right? Because they want peace, and so they don't deal with it. They don't conflict it. They're very quick to apologize. They'll say, it wasn't you, it was me. You know, let's not fight. It was me, it wasn't you. And they'll put the flame out as fast as possible, right? And then there are the sulkers, right? The sulkers. Oh man, the sulkers. They get depressed very, very quickly, right? I mean, a conflict comes up, a fight comes up, and they're just like, okay, you know? And they just kind of go over to the window, and they just kind of, you know, sulk over here, and you're like, are you okay? Yeah, I just wish somebody loved me is all, you know? Just all by myself, I wanna be, you know, and they sulk, they just get depressed and they can't deal with it. They just immediately go into their bottomless pit, right? And they can't deal with it. And then there are the stuffers, right? The stuffers. They stuff it down real deep. They're kind of like the peacemakers, except for they are going to hold a grudge, you know? And if you want to know who those people are, who the stuffers are, if you ask them if they're okay, hey, are you okay? You know what their response is? Yep. Which yep is the aggressive form of yes, okay? That's a yes that's like, don't turn your back on me or I'm going to cut you, right? That's what that is, right? It's like, are you okay? Yep. And I'm never going to forget this, you know? Those are the stuffers, right? They just stick it in that closet, but one day that closet's going to break, right? There's those people. Then there are the debaters. There's actually five. I forgot one. There's the debaters, right? And the debaters are the people where you walk in telling them that they did something wrong, but you leave the conversation feeling like you did something wrong, right? They can put this masterful debate together so well, this perfectly rehearsed speech, where you actually come in telling them that they were wrong, and you walk out going, I was the idiot that caused all this. How did we get here? They were the one that didn't pick up the milk, but yet I'm the villain. How did that happen, right? But they're so masterful with their words and their explanations that they can debate their way through a conflict. And then there are the screamers, right? The screamers show how much they love through sheer volume of their voice, right? It's like they have a voice of modulation and just low goes out the window. And screamers, they like to deal with debate or conflicts like, let's just do this. Let's have a cage match. Let's throw each other in the ring, last man standing, and we'll just zing each other and punch each other with words until neither of us can say a single thing. Like, we'll just both feel so miserable and defeated, then we'll have nothing left but to hug each other, you know, and start the day over. We'll just go to bed completely exhausted. So let's just scream this out and have a good brawl, right? That's what the screamers do. And here's the thing, right? If you are one of these, all right, some of you know which one you are, and some of you are thinking about the person next to you, and you know which one they are, right? Probably, God bless you. Are you allergic to this message? Or are you just trying to give Wes a cue? Whichever one you are, you probably married the exact opposite, thinking it would help, right? Like, your dad was a screamer, so you tried to marry a peacemaker, right? And I have can tell you, I can testify. God help me. I can tell you it doesn't work, all right? Because I'm a screamer, if you can't tell. I come from a long line of screamers, okay? And so I thought, you know, I'll marry somebody else. I'll marry a stuffer. Well, it turns out the more I scream, the more she stuffs. The more she stuffs, the more I scream. Doesn't work out that way. Here's the other thing, is that whatever you are, if you haven't already picked up on this, your children are slowly becoming as well, right? I walked in, like I said, I'm a screamer, and I walked past Olivia's room the other day. She had all these dolls and stuff in her bed, and she's running around the room picking stuff up. And she goes, once I told you 3 times to pick up this room, I tell you what, you have 3 seconds to pick up this room, or you were going to get a spanking. 1, 2. And Kate goes, what's going on in there? I said, Olivia, stop acting like your mom. I don't know where she gets that from. It's ridiculous. I tell you what. But it's being passed on to your kids, right? Your kids. If you've seen a teenager, right, those hormones start to fuel that rage, that scream, that sulk, that peacemaker, that debate attitude, and you're like, oh my goodness, I created a mini-me. This, we're not going to survive, right? And it's bad. Conflict is so tricky in the family because a lot of times if we're married or if in our family there's an opposite, opposites attract, right? We like that yin and yang because it's a perfect match, but when it comes in conflict, it can sometimes just rub each other the wrong way. And sometimes conflict in the family, we're just too much alike, right? And it's not good to have a cage match. It's not good that we both are sulkers or peacemakers and we don't deal, you know, with our feelings, that we just kind of drop away and just let it, trying to you know, put it all under the rug. It's not good. So what do we do? How are we supposed to handle conflict? Because conflict is actually, if we handle conflict the right way, it can actually help us assemble the family we want to resemble. But if we don't deal with conflict the right way, oh my goodness, it can just be a recipe for disaster. And it can hurt our family. It can come to the point where we don't want to talk to each other anymore. We don't want a relationship with one another anymore. Because every time we come together, it's just too much. The conflict is too hard, and we didn't deal with it the right way. So how do we deal with conflict? Well, actually, good news, there's something in the Bible about that, right? And so where I want to go is I want to go and look at a letter that Jesus' brother, actually half-brother, wrote. His name is James. He was the brother of Jesus. And can you imagine what it would be like to be in that family, right? Because he was the brother of Jesus, but he was the half-brother because he wasn't God's son. He was Joseph's son, right? So you can imagine growing up with a sibling who kept going around saying he was going to be the savior of the world, you know, you'd want to slap him, you know, eventually, because you'd be getting on your nerves, right? So you imagine what that was like. And what we do know of James is that James was not a Christian when Jesus was alive. When Jesus was alive and doing his ministry thing between the ages of 30 and 33, James was not a Christian. James did not go to see Jesus die on the cross. They were not that close. But something happened, we don't know what, to where James actually did become a Christian, did begin to follow Christ, did have a relationship with God, and actually became a pretty profound leader of the new church. And it came at a perfect time because there came a time after Jesus' death where Christians were persecuted. Christians were persecuted, put to death, unfairly punished and treated. And so James writes this letter to all of Israel. And it was a very Jewish written letter, but it was to anybody who was a Christian. And at that time, you know how it is, when things get bad, when conflict starts to happen, people are negative, people are like, it's the end of the world, we're not going to make it. And there was a lot of conflict between Christians, between brothers and sisters in Christ. And so what we're going to talk about today is great in terms of family. We're going to be looking at it through the family lens, but this applies to anywhere. This applies to work. This applies to coworkers. This applies to neighborhoods, communities, countries, okay, what we're going to talk about today. So James writes this letter about what to do with this conflict that everybody has. And this is what he says in James 4, verse 1. It's a very, very short book. He says, what is causing the quarrels and fights among you? What is causing the quarrels and fights among you? Let's think about it. Let's see if we can get to the root of the cause. Okay? What is causing the conflict among you? Now, let's just pretend, because we can't do this, because I want you all to walk out of here liking each other. But if you turn to the person you came to church with, and you said, honey, sweetheart, sugar bear, big daddy, whatever you know, just using the names that Wes and Carrie use. But when we fight, what do you think causes it? You know, when we fight, the last fight we had, who started it? You know, what do you think started it? What do you think was the cause of that fight? Do you know what that person wouldn't say to you? Well, they might say it to you, right? But you know what that person's thinking in their head? You. What do you think causes the fights? You know, who do you think starts it? What do you think the problem is? You did it. You did it. And if you said it out loud, do you know what their response would be? Actually, I think it was you. It was actually you. No, it was you. And that's what we do, right? You. We always think it was the other person. Why are we in conflict? Why are we fighting? Well, because you did this. Because you said this. Because you decided to spend your money here. Because you decided this decision for our family. Because you said this to me. Because you had this attitude. Because you weren't faithful. Because you went out and did this thing. It was you. And that's what we think of in terms of conflict. Why are we in conflict? Well, see, it all started when so-and-so did this. And it's them that's the problem. Interesting, right? But James goes on, and this is what he says next. Right after this, he says, Don't they come? Isn't it true? If you think about it long enough, let's just try to change our thinking, because we always think it's them. But let me just for a second, let me bend your ear. Let me make you think a little bit differently. Isn't it true? Don't they come from the evil desires at war within you? Let's think about it just for a second, okay? Just be comfortable with maybe the fact that you're wrong, okay? Isn't it true that maybe that the quarrels and the fights and the conflict that we have, is it maybe possibly true that the place that it all starts is an evil desire within you? That it's not so much them, but maybe possibly the whole thing starts with you. Now, some of you are thinking, evil desire, that sounds terrible. I'm not an evil person. I don't have an evil bone in my body, you know? Well, let me break this down for you. So when we talk about evil, okay, we always think like the devil, you know? We always think like terrorist, evil person, full of hate, okay? It's not what the Bible really is talking about when we talk about evil, all right? Particularly this translation of it, okay? When we talk about evil, evil's like the anti-God, the opposite of God. And so when we talk about evil, what we're really saying, kind of a synonym for it, is selfishness, okay? So just kind of erase that word evil from your head and think, don't they come from the selfish desires at war within you? And then he says this next. This is the next thing he says. You want what you don't have. So you scheme and kill to get it. All right, so let's look at this whole thing. What's causing this conflict among you guys? Let's think about it this way. Isn't it true that it comes from selfish desires at war within you? Isn't what's really going on is you want what you don't have? Again, think about it for a minute, okay? Think about it. Don't let the devil create a wall here and keep you from thinking about this, all right? Nobody knows what you're thinking in your head, okay? Nobody's told you you're wrong yet. I'll get there, all right? But isn't it true that the problem here is you're not getting what you want? Isn't it true that the real problem here, the reason there's all this emotion, the reason that there's all this anger, is you told them to do something and they're not doing it, and you're not getting what you want? Isn't it true that they made a promise? They said they were going to do something. They said they would uphold to this. They said they wouldn't. And you wanted them to do this. And now they're not doing that, or they broke that promise, or they broke that trust. And you're looking at them and you're not getting what you want. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Yeah, but what I want isn't bad. Don't go there yet, okay? Don't go there yet. I'm not talking about wanting the right things or the wrong things. Let's just talk about the fact that that is what is going on, even if it's a good thing to want. Isn't the problem here is that you're not getting what you want? And that's what's making you angry. That's what's making you stressed. That's what's making you emotional. That's what's causing the conflict. You're not getting what you want. So James says, so here's what you do. You scheme and you kill to get it. You want it so bad. You want it so bad that you are going to do whatever it takes to get it, right? you are going to scream and you are going to threaten, right? And you tell your kid or you tell that person in your family, you know, you better do this. I'm telling you what, if you don't do this, I am going to do this. I'm going to ground you. I'm going to take your car. You are going to get it. You know, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to divorce you. You just wait. If you don't do what I want, I am going to get mine. Whatever I can take. Let me think of something that they really want, okay? Because they've taken what I want. So let me think of something they really want. And I'm going to hold it hostage is what I'm going to do, right? I'm going to hold it hostage. And we do. We get in these fights and we go, you know what? If you don't give me what I want, it's going to get it is what we do. And we threaten to withhold, to take away, to leave, to abandon, to hurt. For what? For the sake of getting what we want. There is something that we want, and we will do whatever it takes to get it. And then James continues on. He says this next. He says, so then, here's what happens. You're jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you fight. And you wage war to take it away from them. You want something so bad. You want an outcome that you will do whatever it takes to the point where in your family, you wage war against each other to get it. And you will scheme and you will come very, very close to even manipulating the situation in order to see the outcome that you want. In order to get what you want out of it. Because you want them to listen, and you want them to do what they promised, and you want what you want. So you do whatever you can to get it. You know, I see it all the time in families. Families will come talk to me. Families will say, I need to sit down. I need to talk to you about my marriage. I need to talk to you about my relationship with my kids. And it always goes the same way. It always goes the same way. It goes, well, here's what they're doing wrong. They're doing this. It's them. And all I hear in the back of my head is, they're not giving me what I want. That's the problem, Pastor. And so can you help me? How can I get what I want out of them? Because they're not giving me what I want. So what can I do to get it out of them? And I really don't have an answer for them. Because all we think that we can do is tell me the words I need to say. Tell me the scheme I need to get there. Tell me how it is the next time we fight. Tell me how to fight so that I can get what I want. Now, just think about if we could grasp just this part, right? Just if we could grasp this part, all right? If you're not a Christian, this is just, you know, a good to-do that will work for you, okay? If you thought about the next fight that you had and things start to get emotional and you start to go at each other, if you just stopped and said, do you know what, little lady? Do you know what, young man? Do you know what, honey? Do you know what the problem is? I'm not getting what I want. And so I'm going to go in my room and I'm going to think about this for a minute and I'm going to think about what it is I want out of you and why it's making me so angry. And then you just walked in, you went in your bedroom and shut the door. They would be baffled, right? Their jaw would drop on the floor, right? But that's not what we do. We yell and we berate and we fight and we go to war until they give us what we want, until we hear the words that we want them to say. But think about before the conflict happened, if before the war started, we stopped and we said, do you know what the problem is here? I'm not getting what I want. That's where this emotion is coming from. That's what's making me angry. They're not making me angry. I am in control of my emotions. They have no power over my emotions, over the volume of my voice, over how I deal with this. The real problem here, what's doing this, is not them, but is what is a selfish desire inside of me. The real problem here, what's really going on, what's in conflict, is that I'm not getting what I want. Do you think for just a minute that maybe if we both did that, the temperature would come down? That maybe we wouldn't scream at each other? That maybe we wouldn't yell? You know? Again, every sermon I write, I have to preach it to myself first. You know, but I even did this with my toddler. My toddlers, both of them, you know, I'm a good husband. I let my wife, I scheduled her a massage yesterday. And so I sent her off to get a massage. And I thought, I'll watch two kids. And of course, when mom leaves, the monkey rage comes out. And so, you know, they're going and they're doing all these things. And I stopped and I was about to tell Olivia something. And I said, you know what, Olivia, do you know what the problem is here? Daddy's not getting what he wants. Oh, that's hard to say. Okay, let's calm. And just instantly, I was like, all right, she's a three-year-old, and that's the problem. Daddy's not getting what he wants. The temperature, all of a sudden, and the volume, everything went down, and everything got calm, right? Just if we took that part. But James goes on, right? James goes on, and this is what he says next. He goes on to this next verse, and he says, here's the problem. Yet you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. And even when you ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong and you want only what will give you pleasure. God says, here's the problem, okay? You think, oh, I'm about to fix this, right? I'm going to straighten this kid out. I'm going to tell them what's wrong with them. And I'm going to be the judge and the jury here in just a little bit, right? And James says, here's the problem. You go and you scheme and you wage war thinking, I'm going to get what I want. But here's the thing. When you go after what you want and you try to be in charge, you try to be large and in charge and you fight your way through it, all you do is you kill your relationships. You kill your marriage. You kill your relationships with your kid. All you do is hurt people, all on the mission to get what you want, right? That's your battle plan. That's your mission. That's going to be success as you hear the words, I'm right, you're wrong, or whatever it may be, the outcome that you're looking for, and you go to war for it. But you know what the problem is that you go after it, trying to be large in charge, when really what you should be doing is you should be going to God. Because here's the truth, you are powerless. You do not have the ability to change people or change people's hearts. But do you know who does? God does. God does. God has the ability to transform the way a person thinks, the way a person feels, the way the person acts. And James says, here's what you should be doing. You have a problem. You have somebody you're in conflict with. Let me ask you this. When's the last time you prayed about it? Because you're real good at gossiping about it and fighting about it and talking about it with somebody else. When's the last time you talked to God about it? Show me your pursuit of God in the midst of this conflict. Because have you guys been going to church together? Have you been learning? Have you been in the Word? Have you been praying about this? Have you been asking Him? And when you ask, what are you asking? Are you praying to God? God, make them obey me, you know? God, give me what I want. God, make my child be that good child, you know? And we always say the same thing. I only want what is best for them. You just said it. I only want. You want. That's the problem, is you want something. And James says, when you pray, are you praying, God, make them do? Are you saying, God, may your kingdom come, your will be done? Are you praying, God, you know what's best. You know what to do for them. Do the work in them that you need them to do. And don't let me be a distraction. Don't let me get in the way. Don't let me push them away any further. God, do in them what you need to do and do in me what you need me to be, right? Is that how you pray? Or do you pray, God, make them be the kid I want them to be. Make them the spouse I want them to be. Give me what I want. He says, if you do that, if you're just after what you want, your own selfish desires, you want your own pleasure, then guess what? God's not going to give it to you. That's not what this is about. And here's what I think the real question that we have to deal with, okay? This is going to be the real strap in, okay? You got to really strap in. Here we go. I'm going to sit in my seat, so it's about to get serious. So you haven't listened to a thing I've said. Listen to this, okay? Here we go, because this is going to be a game changer. Game changer here, okay? So here's the thing. There's conflict because they can't give you what you want. So here's my question for you, okay? What if they can't give you what you want? Okay? What if maybe at this point in time or ever, they can't give you what you want? What if they are incapable of it? What if they have followed a bad pattern for so long that they will never be who you want them to be? What if they will be incapable of loving you the way that you want to be loved? What if they deal with this addiction for the rest of their life? What if they always struggle with this attitude? What if they can't give you what you want? And here's my question for you. It's going to be on the screen. Can you love them when they can't give you what you want? Can you love them when they can't give you what you want? Because that's the thing. We fight so hard. Give me what I want. I want what I want. Or I'm going to divorce them. Or I'm going to leave them. Or I'm going to write them off. But here's the thing. Here's my question for you. Can you love them regardless of the fact that they can't give you what you want? Because that's real love if you can. That's real love if you can. And here's the thing. If you're not a Christian, you just take the first part of the message. You just apply that. It's going to help out your family. Great. But if you are a Christian, you have to do this. You have to. Because here's the thing. God wanted something from you, and you couldn't give it to him. And he loved you in spite of it. God wanted a relationship with you. God wanted obedience from you. God wanted faith from you. And the human race couldn't give it to him. Yet he still sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for you and I so that we could be forgiven and so that we could be shown mercy and grace and have a second chance. We couldn't give him what he wanted. And still, he loved us. So to be a Christian like Christ, that's what that I-A-N means, like. To be Christ-like, to be a little Christ, to be like Jesus. If you're going to claim to be Christian, it's the ability, it's the maturity to be able to love people, even when they can't give you what you want. And let me tell you something. If you can reach this pinnacle, all right, this is the pinnacle of Christian maturity, all right? This is, for those of you who are Nazarenes in the room, this is entire sanctification right here, is the ability to love people when they can't give you what you want. And if you can do that, I am telling you what, I will testify till I am blue in the face. It will change your family forever. Kate and I remind ourselves of this all the time with our one-year-old and our three-year-old. There are things that we want from our one-year-old and three-year-old. There are things we ask them to do. There are things that we think are humanly normal to do that we ask them to do, and they don't. And we're looking at them and like, what are you, three? Come on, you know? And we have to stop all the time. We have to remind each other, honey, they're 3 years old. They're 1 year old. That's who they are. They can't give you what you want. Can you love them even when they can't give you what they want, what you want? Think about that question for a minute, all right? Think about that. The person that you're in conflict with in your family right now or the person that you were in conflict with in the past, they might have done something wrong. They might be doing something wrong right now. That's not what I'm talking about. But just isn't the problem right now, the reason you're so mad, the reason you're so upset, is because they are not giving you what you want. Okay, so what are you going to do? Are you going to write them off? Are you going to forget about them? Are you going to be done? Are you going to say, well, not my family. I don't care about you anymore. I want a divorce. Or can you have the ability, through God's help, to love them in spite of the fact that they cannot give you what you want? If you can do that, I'm telling you, you are that much closer to being like Jesus. And if you can do that, you will always have a good marriage. I'm not saying they will always give you what you want, but if you can do that, if you can love one another, in spite of the fact that sometimes the other person on the other side can't give you what you want, you will have a close, loving, strong marriage. If you can do this with your kids, if you can look at your kid and say, even when you don't give me what I want, even when you mess up, even when you make mistakes, you know what? In spite of that, I want you to know, no matter what has happened and no matter what you do in the future, I will always love you. That's the kind of relationship where your kids will always want to come home. They will still pick up the phone and want to talk to you. They will still entrust you with information. They will still treat you like a friend, and they will still treat you like a confidant, and you will always have that close relationship. Not because they were perfect, not because they did everything you aspired them to do, but because you made the decision to love them even when they can't give you what you want. That kind of family is the kind of family we should all want to have. Now, I know what some of you are thinking, right? Some of you are going, but Pastor, seriously though, they are doing something wrong. You know, what I want is a faithful husband, okay? I'm not asking for much. All I want is a faithful husband. All I want them to do is to get a job. All I want them to do is to stop hanging out with these friends. All I want them to do is to change their attitude. I know, look, what you want, it might be completely justified. It might make complete sense. It's something that we would all want, and it's not something wrong to want. I'm not talking about not wanting what you want. What I'm talking about is when they fail you, and they will, when conflict arises, and they cannot give you what you want, what are you going to fight for most? Are you going to fight for the relationship, or are you going to fight for the outcome that you want? Because what's done is done, what's said is said, what's happened is happened. Now what's on the line is the future. The past is the past. So what's on the line now is the future, and you've got to decide what's most important. Is it the relationship? Is it being like Christ? Or is it what you want? What's going to win in this battle? Your selfish desire inside you that makes you mad and makes you upset. Or the relationship that you want with your kid, with your spouse, with your parents, with your grandparents, with your uncle, with your aunt, with your cousins. What do you want to win? Because whatever you want to win is how you will act. And that'll be the outcome. And at the end of your life, what is it that you want to have as your legacy? A life and a legacy that says, I got what I wanted. Or a life and a legacy that said, in spite of the fact that sometimes people couldn't give me what I wanted, I love them like Christ anyway. And I had a relationship with them. I had a family with them. And even though we weren't perfect, and even though we let each other down, we still always had each other. Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning, as some of us this morning can probably think about somebody that we are in conflict with right now. Somebody who we may have been fighting with, somebody who we may have had words with, somebody who we're not talking to. God, our natural desire is to feed into that selfishness inside of our heart, to get what it is that we want. And so to get what we want, we squeeze all that we can out of the person to get the words that we want to hear, to get the behavior that we want, to get the attitude that we want. But God, this morning we're faced with a difficult question. What if they can't give us what we want? What if they're incapable? What if they're just mentally unable? God, what if it's just going to take time, and maybe it's not going to happen today, but it might happen in the future. Whatever it may be, God, will you help us to loosen our grip and to quit scheming and fighting and killing the relationships that you've blessed us with and you've given us in our family? God, the next time that we go into conflict with them, will you remind us that we are powerless, but you are powerful? And will you help us, God, go into prayer, and will you help us to say, God, before I start this conversation, I recognize what it is I want. And I want to deal with this part with you before it causes me to fight with them. And God, will you do in me what you need to do in me before I go and try to squeeze something out of them that they can't give me? And will you do in them what you see needs to be done? Because regardless of it all, I love them just the way that you have loved me. God, if each of us would pray that prayer, if each of us would come to that place before we go into conflict with other people, it would save some marriages. It would save relationships with kids. It would mend fences with cousins, with uncles, with aunts. It would bring us together as a family. But most of all, God, it would make us even more like your Son, Jesus Christ. And that's why we're all here today, God. Because none of us this morning are perfect, and none of us have all the answers. And each one of us have times where we give in to our selfish desires, and we don't do what people want. God, sometimes we don't even do what you want. And so, God, I pray that if there's something this morning we need to be forgiven from, if there's a selfish desire that we've displayed lately, God, I pray that this morning we would just seek your forgiveness. That we would say, God, I am sorry I dealt with this the way I did with my kid. God, I am sorry for the way I dealt with this in my marriage. I'm sorry for the words I said. God, I thought I was justified. I thought I was doing what was fair. I thought I was doing what was right. But it turns out, God, I didn't. Turns out I was listening to that selfish voice inside of me that is so easy to turn to. But God, I pray this morning that you would transform my heart, that you would show me how to love the way that your Son loved us on the cross, that you would put in me the tools that I need to be able to build into my family, to build into my marriage, to build in my kids, the principles that your Son, Jesus Christ, displayed to each and every single one of us in his life here on earth. God, that's my prayer for every single one of us here today. God, it's my prayer for all of us so that every single one of us can assemble the family that we want to resemble. God, we love you this morning. We pray these things in your name.